Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Wendy Sellers, the HR lady. Today, I am here with JC.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
We are going to be talking about some weird stuff today. No, like literally, we are going to be talking about unique and weird employment laws in the United States. So definitely grab a pen, unless you're driving, then please don't. And we're going to have five episodes to talk about some, you know, wacky employment laws that employers across the country should know in order to stay out of court, stay out of the news, and stay out of our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, Wendy. You know, human resource professionals constantly encounter new and extremely strange HR laws. They really do. All of you out there know this. And some of the strangest workplace regulations of the United States. Yeah, we're going to touch on them right here. And look, although they are prevalent in the workplace today, non-compete clauses, Wendy, are not enforceable, believe it or not, in North Dakota. Non-compete agreements can only be made by business partners as well as by business buyers and sellers. That's not Wendy Sellers, that's sellers. Employees are not permitted to sign them either. What do you think about that one right there?
I actually did know about that one for some strange reason. I've worked with a lot of companies that, had one employee here or one location there. And honestly, a lot of the times that we as HR professionals figure this stuff out is by falling on our face, to be quite honest. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know. I was just in North Dakota recently, and so I'm not completely surprised by that law. But a little bit of me says, you know what? Hey, they're onto something there, because we make it pretty restrictive with non-compete for employees to leave a bad company and to, you know, continue a living without having to physically get up and move their entire family.
Yeah. You know, it's not fair. You head to another place like Arkansas when non-compete and non-solicitation agreements are very wide, overly wide. And Arkansas employers need to amend them, they have to start over entirely. In fact, the entire agreement must be thrown out and the employers must start over from scratch. The courts won't permit changes to the agreements, so they can't be made.
Yeah, there's also a lot of unique and wacky and maybe useful, maybe not, laws throughout the country regarding salaries, regarding if you can share salary information, regarding if you can ask your candidates or your employees what they made in previous positions. And now I know some of you that are listening today going, whoa, we can't ask that in an interview. And for the most part, if you were my client, I would tell you, please don't.
Erring on the side of caution, safety is always key, right?
Absolutely.
State of California is notorious for having trouble with human resource compliance. And it calculates overtime in a different way than the federal government, believe it or not. Given that the federal overtime regulations recently changed, this part is borderline noteworthy, right? So in California, after working 40 straight hours, employees are compensated at time and a half for the first 8 hours of the seventh consecutive day. That sounds... Right now, Wendy, that sounds like there's two trains speeding on the tracks at 100 miles an hour. And what's Ted's name? It's that confusing to me, you know? But
it's
look,
very confusing.
If an employee works more than 12 hours a day or more than 8 hours 7 days in a row, they're also entitled to double compensation.
Yeah, California is a crazy one. They are definitely employee-centric, not employer-centric. Which many states, their laws basically protect employers. I would say most states, the laws are more geared toward protecting employers, but than the employees who we need to, you know, make the state profitable or just the businesses. So it's interesting. I've worked in California. I've never physically lived there, but I have worked with quite a few businesses as an HR director. And then as a consultant with California. And the interesting thing is one time way back in the day when I was much younger and I was with an organization that we did a lot of mergers and acquisitions. And one of our big mergers was a company that had most of their business on the West Coast of the United States. And we had most of our business at that time on the East Coast and Midwest. And we merged into one company, and there was an HR director over there. She basically said, I'm going to lose my job, aren't I? I'm like, oh, heck no. You're getting California and all those crazy states out there. New England states, too, though, are also, I feel like California, the West Coast, the entire West Coast, literally along the Pacific Ocean, and then New England states tend to definitely be more protective of employees. I recently was dealing with a client as a consultant. We were recruiting, and then she literally said, we can hire anywhere in the United States, even Alaska, Hawaii, but we will not hire out of California. Because, and it was hard. It sucked because those employees or those candidates were, you know, were right there, and they were right what we needed. It was a technology firm, but the company itself was not prepared to deal with all of the requirements, the legal requirements of being a company there. So not just even the salary part, but of applying to be a company there and all the requirements and taxes and insurances. So,
right.
You know, there's pros and cons. And the reason I'm sharing this, JC, is because for those of you that are listening today, if you are expanding across the United States, virtual workforce or physical, you do have to know that many states require you to physically apply to be a business in their state, even if you're not there, even if you're just remote. So you still may need to have an application in whatever their department is, Department of Labor, that state Department of Labor, Bureau of Licenses. It's something different in every state. And so for the people that are listening today and you say, oh, wait, I have an employee in California or I have a remote employee in Ohio, you really need to go back to maybe your accounting team, your legal team, if you have one, and say, are we registered as a business there? And if we're not, what does that mean? I could tell you, if you're not registered as a business in California, you're going to be caught really quick. Some other states, it may be years. So we don't want you to be in trouble with the state and get taxed out the wazoo.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's always been that million-dollar question on the table. You know, when do you actually get paid? From the employee perspective, when does that paycheck hit? And you know, in New Hampshire, new legislation makes salary information much more clear, regardless of whether an employee is paid daily, weekly, bi-monthly, semi-monthly, or annually. The employer is required to give them written notice of their pay rate or compensation at the time of hire and any time that it changes. The specific procedures utilized to determine pay must also be specified in the notifications together with the pay date and location.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that just make sense?
I'm wondering what they used to do until then. Like, yeah, I'll pay you. It's coming. It's in the mail. A check's in the mail.
I could 100% tell you that there is a reason for this law, and every state should have it. They're not going to, but they should, because how many times I'm dealing with clients of all sizes, even when I was, in corporate HR too, and there you'd go into organizations, say, I want to see your orientation package. I want to see your new hire letter, your new hire package. And in that, it rarely says in the offer letter, if there even is an offer letter, oh, this is when you're going to get paid. What it might say is we get paid every other week, but that doesn't say, well, when does that start? When's my first paycheck and how do I get paid and where do I go pick up the check, or is it direct deposit and how do I make that happen? But a lot of times I see this with large companies too, that we in HR, and I'll just blame HR because I'm the HR lady, but could be payroll, could be someone else if there's not an HR department. We just think, oh, well, we'll get to that. But we don't really realize, well, that's what the employee needs to know now.
Yeah.
So they and their family could figure out, when is the first check coming? Is it going to be a half check? Is it going to be a full check? How do I get it? Literally, how do I pay my rent? And when will I get my first check? And then when can I expect the rest of it? So for those folks that are listening, if you are one of those companies and you're sitting there going, you know, oh, we don't say it in our new hire package either, please add it in there in the offer letter when they get paid, not just orientation day, because if they agreed to an offer and they don't start for 2 or 3 weeks, their family might be planning out, okay, when's our last check going to hold us through from the previous job or unemployment? And then when is our new check going to come? So when can we bridge the gap of getting groceries, paying the water bill, whatever it might be? So these weird and unique and sometimes wacky laws are very important. Before we move on, I want to jump back to this California law real quick. Sure. About just about daily overtimes, because I did do a lot of work in California at one point. I've dabbled in it in the past few years, but you know, their law basically says that if you work overtime, so you're an hourly employee, you work more than 8 hours on a Monday,
yeah,
even if you only work at 4 hours the rest of the week, you get, say, let's just say you work 10 hours on Monday, you are supposed to get overtime for Monday, even if you don't work 40 hours for that whole pay week. Now, there's some ways around this, and you have to get all your employees to kind of vote on it and agree to it. Again, I haven't worked in California for a while as a full-time HR director or a full-time HR consultant, but it is very important for you to know those laws, but there are some ways around it. And I don't really mean it to like to get away with it, but to get everybody on the same page. So anybody here is in California, you probably know what I'm talking about. If you have one employee in California, I encourage you to join some kind of California HR association, follow some California specific employment lawyers on social media, you know, enroll and get their newsletters emailed to you, stalk them on LinkedIn. Make sure you're doing the right thing, because California and a lot of other states are out to protect their employees, not the employer.
Isn't it so that I may stand corrected here, but didn't Sherm have a specific California HR law class or certification at one point?
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. So thank you for bringing that up. That's another one. I was this close to getting that too. This was way back when it first came out, and I was managing, you know, employees out in California. I was like, great, I better get this California Sherm certification. And then when my company at the time merged with another company, I literally, that was before everything was digital. We had the whole like CDs and everything. I packed it up and shipped it out to the HR director out there. I'm like, no, you're getting it now, not me.
Yeah, HRCI is in the same boat too. They've got a California certification study tool as well. HR California is such a big deal. Definitely follow Wendy's advice, follow up on that. Wendy, I got two things on discrimination I want to hit you with here, and these are very interesting. In Michigan, discrimination is not just based on race, age, or gender. It is also forbidden to discriminate against or harass someone at work because of their height or weight. That covers you and me. I mean, I'm the fat guy, but you're the short girl. I didn't mean to assume your gender, but I think you might be.
I am she, her. Yes,
there we
Wendy
are.
Sellers, the HR lady. She, her is what I identify with. I think it's very interesting. I just did a discrimination, harassment training the other day. And I was talking about unique biases. So this wasn't even law, but that there are actual biases, in the unconscious bias world for height, for weight, for attractiveness as well. And that if you're, for example, most presidents of the United States have been tall. And so you could look up what that is. And that, so if you were tall, you were more likely to be seen as, I don't know, more confident, which makes no sense to me whatsoever, or attractive, or, weight depends on different cultural norms. But, you know, in the U.S., it's usually somebody that's physically fit. And so, and it's so wrong. It is so wrong. So I'm glad to see that Michigan has this. My state, I live in the state of Florida, which most of you know, and we don't have a heck of a lot of unique laws or laws at all. It seems like it's the wild, wild west, even though we're in the South. But we actually do have a state law here that is the traditional discrimination law is based on 40 for age is based on over the age of 40. You cannot discriminate against. And in Florida, it's all ages. So you just take that off the table. But coming back up to the height, the weight, attractiveness, you know, anything that is on the, you know, borderline bias, we should train our managers to deal with that and ignore those cues because they're not part of the job description.
You know, it's interesting too, if you're a handsome man, you might get perks outside of the workplace, right? But at work, it's been proven that handsome men do struggle. According to research, good-looking men are less likely to be promoted at work by male bosses. An interesting fact. Feel free to Google that. Research that. And let's flip it around once again for discrimination one last time here. Arizona law prohibits discrimination against workers who possess a medical marijuana card or who test positive for drugs. The majority of multi-state firms are not eligible for the exception for jobs that are essential to public safety because of its necessities that they establish a drug testing policy that complies with Arizona law.
Oh, man, that one is definitely interesting and I think necessary because we have so much going on with, you know, medical marijuana or marijuana where you can just go into a state where it's legal, but it's still federally illegal, you know, so federally marijuana, regardless if it's medical marijuana or not, is federally illegal. So many employers are just left going, okay, what are we going to do? It's federally legal. It's not legal in our state, or it's legal in our state, but only with a medical marijuana card. What do we do? My rule of thumb, you know, it's different with every employer, like you just mentioned about the safety sensitive position. So if you have any safety sensitive positions, especially if they require something like a DOT license, right? Or DOT certification. Marijuana, any kind of drugs, whether they're legally obtained or not, are going to be off the table. You cannot typically be under the influence, especially if it's a federally mandated license, right? But if it's just a local or a company policy, you know, I told one of my clients about 2 years ago, who was a creative client, we'll just put it that way, you know, artsy and creative. So I want to start testing. I want to test this one candidate for for marijuana because I think, or for drugs because I
just
think they're on something.
Just this one person, right?
Yeah, and I was like, thank you for calling me first before you did so because are you prepared to test your entire creative department? She said no.
Right.
I go, well, then we're not testing that person either because you're being judgy right now and you're showing bias. So it's basically all or nothing, give or take a few. We're going to continue our conversation on unique, weird, and even wacky employment laws across the United States. Definitely want to talk about some things that changed during the pandemic. As if we in HR haven't had enough on our plate, so many states went and changed laws or created new laws that you may be hearing about for the first time today.
Yeah, so much going on in the world of laws, right? You know, in 2021, state and municipal legislators shift their focus away from COVID-19 regulations towards more traditional employment law issues. And as time went by, although COVID-19-related legislation has gone into effect in multiple states and the District of Columbia, specifically in 2022, the rest of the country is seeing a much more diverse set of employment laws going into effect throughout the span of the year. California, Illinois, New York, Oregon, they were all extremely active. These states and the District of Columbia have enacted family leave legislation, with California adding protected leave for the care of in-laws for both private and public sector employees. The COVID-19 epidemic undoubtedly had an impact on everything that we're talking about right here. Wendy, over to you.
Yeah, I love the one about the care of parents, parent in-laws, you know, for private and public sector employees, of course, with California, like we just said. And what I see often is California or another employee focused state will do something. And then, you know, slowly but surely other states will add it into their, you know, laws as well. Now, here's the thing, everyone that's listening. If you are managing employees that are sprinkled throughout the United States, you know, a state here, a couple states there, you don't have to wait for a law to come out. You can say, you know what, we have you know, an office in California or maybe up in Massachusetts. And we are going to, as a company, follow the most strict laws, even though they're not laws in all of our states. You can do that.
That's kind of wild. Talk to me about that.
Your employment attorney is going to go, don't listen to her. but listen to me for a second. Just hear me out. The reason I would suggest this is a couple reasons. One, it would be easier to just have one set of policies, right? So you don't have to have a handbook and say, okay, these last few pages of the handbook, this addendum is for California, this addendum is for Pennsylvania, this addendum is for Florida. What I inevitably see happen, because I've lived it, is the people in the other states that are not protected then find out that, hey, in Oregon recently, they added an anti-discrimination statute to include natural hairstyles as a protected characteristic. So above and beyond the EEOC characteristics, Oregon is a state said, if you have a company, in our state, you cannot discriminate against natural hairstyles. This was specifically for, you know, African-American, Black, non-white people, let's face it, let's put it that way, so that employers can't say, oh, no dreads, you have to shave your hair, you have to do this, you have to do that. Oregon said, nope, we're not going to play that game. Now you, as a company, can say, neither are we. All of our states, all of our locations are going to adopt this. The only risk I would say there is, again, I'm not an HR, I'm not an employment lawyer. I have a lot of experience, but I would suggest that you do get with your employment lawyer, because the only risk I say there is if you're going to follow something that's not law and then you screw up because you didn't train your managers, you're going to be held accountable by you know, law, because it's in your policy book. Does that make sense?
Absolutely does. And you know, the same strategy was used in a few towns in North Carolina. In keeping with the growing theories of how to effectively separate independent contractors from employees, states have introduced legislation that harshly penalizes firms that mistakenly classify their personnel as independent contractors. So, aside from natural hairstyles, moving down a separate path, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there when we think about California, AB 5, and going back to what Wendy said, if you take some of the strictest policies out there and consider enacting that within your organization, this is one of those moments we might leave a light on for you, you know?
Leave a light on. Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be have a big giant help sign on it, right?
Exactly. Hey, I've got one out of left field I want to hit you with here, though. This is fairly new in 2022 in New York State, believe it or not, Wendy. New electronic monitoring notice requirements. It's a law that compels New York State companies to notify new hires when they monitor or otherwise intercept phone calls, emails, or internet usage or access using any electronic device or system. The law took effect May 7, 2022 in New York. Employees must acknowledge receipt of the notification in writing or electronically, and the notice must be in written or electronically communicated forms. Additionally, employers must display a notice about electronic monitoring where it can be seen by the workers who are being monitored electronically. Kind of thought you might find that interesting in regards to COVID-19 and remote work and everything that we're up against. And geez, employers, they've got employees all over the country, like you had mentioned, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I could see why it's necessary to say, hey, you weren't maybe remote before, and now you are temporarily or permanently. By the way, these are all the things we're going to monitor off of your computer or email, whatever. I see both sides of that, like a little bit of an invasion of privacy. But in my opinion, if the employer provided all those resources, like the computer, the internet, email, then that they have the right to do that. But yikes, how about, man, talk about no trust.
Having the right to do it. And now the employees, all they got to do is let the employees know that they are doing it. You know, it does change the paradigm of the workforce here a little bit. Hey, three states improve the enforcement of non-compete agreements. Non-compete agreements of more than 12 months will no longer be enforceable in Oregon, or it might be Oregon, depending on where you're from. as of January 1st, 2022. Non-compete, it's such a big issue in 2022. What's with that?
Well, I think it goes back to a couple of our other podcasts that we have coming out or have come out is, you know, the lack of staffing, you know, trying to hold on to talent. We're spending tons of money to and time is money to get talent. And now we want to hang on to them. And so that's probably where some of the non-compete is coming to say, hey, no, you can't go work for our competitor after we just trained you with all this information. And, you know, spent all this money to train and develop you and get you up to speed. And now you're going to take that information somewhere. But, you know, that I think that's, you know, the non-compete and the non-disclosure are two different things. So don't, you can leave here. You just can't take our stuff with you and share it with other companies. I'm cool with that. And I think most employees would be like, yeah, no problem. I'm not going to steal your information. Wink, wink, because we know some employees will, but generally speaking, but the non-compete, man, it always bugs me. Like, if are you that concerned as an employer that people are going to leave you? And if you are, what do something different. Change your environment.
So we've got two more things here before I want to get into workplace postings with you, if that's okay. You know, OSHA, yeah. OSHA issued a emergency temporary standard at the end of the year requiring firms with 100 or more employees to verify that every employee is COVID-19 immunized or alternatively submit to weekly COVID-19 testing. We've seen a lot of things back and forth with that throughout the country. What are your thoughts on?
Oh my goodness. I have done so much training on that. Like every week during that time period, there was something new. More, even if OSHA didn't issue something new, it was one of those, okay, something's coming up that they're clarifying this. And then there's lawsuits and there's this and there's that. So, you know, my thoughts are, without taking either side, is like they're trying to do the best that they can to get keep our country as a whole safe, get people to, you know, try to protect the folks that needed it the most. Whether you believe in vaccines or not, it's irrelevant at this point in time because a lot of people did go and get vaccinated. My biggest concern, and at that point in time, I was living in an area where there was a lot of elderly people. Yeah. I mean, it was all elderly people and me, I felt. And, you know, and I also have a few clients that were assisted living facilities. And, you know, we did see deaths, unfortunately. And, you know, when it came in the healthcare industry, I agreed with it because, you know, you as an employer, your clients are sick people and elderly yeah. or not. And so you should not only want to protect the clients, the customers, the patients, but also your employees. So the healthcare one, I think most people kind of were like, okay, I get that. The non-healthcare one, man, it was a borderline violation of rights. And for me, I had to do training on it all the time. So it was hard. Yeah. It was hard. I just try to do with the, like, you know, deal with the, listen, we're here. Nobody, you know, most of us in the workforce have not dealt with something like this before, a pandemic, although we have another one coming. Monkeypox is here as well. And that might be affecting our workforce. So I'm just glad I didn't work at OSHA at that point in time. But I have to tell you, JC, last year, the year before, I have never used the word OSHA and been on the OSHA website more in my life. And I hope I never have to again, because I never wanted to be the safety person or the OSHA expert. So for now, I don't believe there's any vaccine requirements per OSHA. I think they all got thrown out, but some organizations still might have some, depending on what state you're in. In the state of Florida, you pretty much kind of can't have one. And I say it pretty much because the way the governor rolled out the rules, when you've looked through it, you kind of can't have one. You have to have exceptions for everything.
Gotcha. Hey, let's pivot away from COVID-19 and sickness here for a brief moment. I'm going to bring you back up to New York, because New York State human rights law, anti-retaliatory practice protection, went into effect on March 16, 2022. And this statute became immediately operative that day. Look, according to the law, it's against the law for an employer to reveal a worker's personnel records because the worker objected to a practice that was prohibited by the New York State Human Rights Law Anti-Retaliatory Commission, right? So because the worker had lodged a complaint, provided testimony, or offered assistance in a case underneath these provisions or in any other judicial or administrative proceeding, you can't take retaliatory functions on them. When launching or responding to a complaint in a legal or administrative procedure, the law does allow employers to reveal personnel files at the right time when commencing respondents to judicial or administrative proceedings. But you just can't go releasing employee files willy-nilly anymore here in New York, especially if it's in this protected situation.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, they should be protected. They're going to court. They're either told to go to court. They're going for an action. You shouldn't be able to throw them under the bus then. Here's the other interesting thing about personnel files for folks that are listening. Know your state laws on this, too, because some states require that if an employee asks for a copy of their personnel file, you have to give it to them. Now, you don't have to give it to them right then and there, but you may have to give it to them within 24 to 48 hours. In other states, they know you don't have to do that. It's up to the employer to say.
Yeah, yes. that's a big broad brushstroke between two different perspectives there. What is it down in Florida?
What do you think it is?
There's give it away. You give it away. Highest bidder. I'll meet you at the flea market.
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't suggest that, but in Florida, you don't have to give, the employee. Now, a lawyer asked you for it, a court asked for it. Of course, you have to. That's a legal requirement. But you do need to know because I have revised quite a few handbooks that I'll look at the handbook and it'll say in there, yes, we'll give you your records. You just need to give us 24 hours notice. And I say, well, that's cool. I think that's great. Transparency to me is key. But let's make sure we clean up those records first, because you may be putting things in files or have managers that have access to things that they shouldn't. So let's clean up all the records first and then say, yes, employee, come on in, see what we have. That's no problem. But just know by law, you may be required to do that and you may not be required. And if you're required to do that by law, and you have things in the wrong folders or things that are not factual, you may get yourself in trouble.
Nobody wants to be in trouble.
We're talking about unique, weird, and even wacky employment laws that you need to know. Before we jump into Ban the Box, I wanted to touch back on something that we were talking about in the previous session, just about COVID. And just a quick reminder not to get into COVID too much, because I'm sure we're all sick over it. But if you are still testing for COVID at work, please stop and go to the EEOC's website and make sure that you know that the middle of July, the EEOC clarified some more information. So it's the EEOC. Just Google what you should know about COVID EEOC, and it'll come up to this. Oh, my goodness. This very, very long page, but specifically go to A.6. And A.6 is an update, again, from July 12, 2022, that says there are new guidelines. You need to have a business reason to test for COVID at work. So it's okay if you're doing it if you pass these guidelines. So some of the guidelines are, level of community transmission in that area, in that zip code, vaccination status of employees, accuracy and speed of different types of tests, breakthrough rate for vaccinated employees, again, in that zip code. So for many of you that have multiple locations, you're going to have many zip codes. Transmission rate in that area, possibility of severe illness, which again, we have to take into account people with illnesses, physical illnesses, ADA issues. If your employees work with those medically vulnerable individuals, whether they are patients, whether they're customers, whether they're coworkers, and then, of course, the potential impact on operations. So please go check that out. With that said, let's jump into some Ban the Box.
Hey, real quick, you're absolutely right, though. That guidance does give employers updated information to help them keep up with COVID-19 and the workplace. It reminds employers how important it is to keep up with changes in public health guidelines and be ready to reevaluate their policies along the way. If you don't do anything today, do one thing. Just listen to what Wendy had to say. She's not going to steer you wrong. Not steering you wrong. So banning the box. Wendy, what's the box? For those in the small business community that might not be familiar with the box, what is the box before we have to talk about banning the box?
Sure. So the box is that good old paper form. It's electronic mostly now, or on a applicant tracking system, but it's the application. So the application to work at your company. In many applications, there's a little checkbox that says, tell me about your criminal history. Have you been arrested? Check yes or no. Have you been convicted? Check yes or no. And so that's the box. First of all, nobody, I don't care where you're located, but in the United States, nobody should be asking, have you been arrested? That it, you could 100% get yourself in trouble. Why? Because an arrest does not mean that you have been convicted. It also could be, you know, a mistaken identity. Unfortunately, those things end up on somebody's criminal record. So you do have to also look at the actual criminal records and then ask questions about it. There is one young lady on LinkedIn right now. I was just on her page this morning that is going viral, that she was arrested, mistaken identity, completely mistaken identity. And it was by a very large company that said, Target, the organization, yeah, that said, we're arresting this person for, I believe it was theft. And they arrested her and, you know, she went to jail and everything and then got out, but she can't remove that from her criminal history now.
Right.
Yeah. Even like, so she's really fighting to say, hey, that wasn't me. You guys know it was me. We all agree to it. You need to help me get this off my record because I can't even get jobs and it's all over the news because of this. So
was her name Alexa Capone, confused with Al Capone? I'm just curious.
No, that all was right. Not her name. But anyways, I take that little sidebar there just to let you know, the ban the box, first of all, remove the box about arrest completely. Now, when we get to the ban the box part of, do you have, say, a felony or do you have a misdemeanor? This is what we're talking about.
All right. So you cannot initially ask a candidate about their criminal background if your company is located in a ban the box state, county, correct, or city. And many jurisdictions have ban the box laws that prohibit inquiries about a candidate's prior criminal or arrest history. There are limitations on the types of questions employers can ask job prospects and, in some circumstances, when questions can be asked. For example, regarding their criminal history, in order to overcome the barriers to employment that job seekers confront, typically a checkbox with that yes or no appears next to this question, as she was describing. But all job applicants will be given equal consideration for employment possibilities under these laws. So you can have a box, but you can't base anything on the box.
It would depends right? on the state.
Depending on the so state.
It does depend on the state. So, for example, Arizona is one of the states that says state agencies, so private employers, which most of our people that are listening today are probably private. So if you're in Arizona, you're probably okay. But if you work for a state and agency, an employer can ask about a candidate's criminal history after the job application is submitted and there's initial interview.
Okay.
So you can't have it on the application at all. Generally, ban the box means nothing on an application. However, once you make an offer, so this is generally, and again, some states are a little more specific, but once you make an offer, you can make a conditional offer of employment. The conditions are based on XYZ. In some cases, it might be criminal background. It might be drug testing. It might be positive references from whatever to employers and personal references. It might be confirmation that you have these licenses or these certifications. So conditional job offer is it's a pretty vague term. You know, I offer you this conditional job based on these conditions. And so the reason they have the ban the box movement is because it has proven to be beneficial to people with the criminal history, that you didn't ask for a criminal history up front. You love them in the interview. You want to send that. You want to give them an offer. I have to have this person on my team. And then you find out later they have a history, whatever it might be. It has been proven that many companies say, no, we want them anyway. So this is really helping employ individuals with the criminal history who have made a mistake at maybe one point in their life. Could have been 20 years ago, could have been 5 years ago. Many employees who do have, many people who do have a criminal history also may be disadvantaged because of other things in their life, where they grew up, lack of education, and let's face it, other things too, disabilities, race, poverty, whatever it might be. And so that's why these are so, so important. And JC, we keep talking about lack of staff. Well, guess what? Here's the staff right here.
Yeah.
I mean, how many companies that give people a chance that have a criminal history, they end up thriving because they're thankful and they're not ready to walk out as much as other people, as other at other companies, you know, because they're saying, hey, this company gave me a chance, even with my history, I'm going to stay here, even though I'm having a hard day.
Taking a trip over to West Michigan real quick, Wendy. Both Detroit and Kalamazoo have city ordinances that say contractors who do work for the city that cost more than $25,000 can't ask about criminal records on their job applications for that work. And the Jackson Chamber of Commerce had a huge meeting, talked with its members about hiring people who have been in prison, promoting that as a positive effect to bring people on board. Employers who are in this situation, banning the box, considering all factors. Does this mean that they have to throw background checks out the window, though?
No, that does not mean that. It means they just can't ask about it up front. They need to conduct the interview, you know, all of that. And then generally speaking, like California's, you can ask about it after conditional job offer is made. Let me pick another state. Same for Delaware, District of Columbia, Hawaii, after a conditional job offer is made. And even, let's see, Illinois here has employers with at least 15 employees and employment agencies. So if you're using an agency, after the notification of an initial interview, or if no interview is held, a conditional offer. First of all, I would hope you're interviewing somebody before right. You're sending them the conditional offer, but that's a whole other story.
Different episode for a different time.
Yeah. So Illinois workers or employers, you know, yours is a little bit different. You have to at least say, I want to interview you. And I would put that in writing because now you're going to have to prove it. And then you could say, and here's some more questions I need to ask. You know, how do you get around this, JC? This is what I say. You know, I tell my clients who are hiring, let's just put it in the job ad, what our conditions are. Hey, because we are licensed by this state or blah, 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 these are the things that we are required. We have to do a drug test, and this is what we accept, and this is what we won't accept. Just saying, for example, you will do a drug test doesn't mean you're going to accept or decline all drugs, you know?
Right.
I have a client who said during the pandemic, and it was a healthcare client, and they weren't covered by the state or the federal government because they did not accept insurance. It was only a cash pay. So they said, we can make our own rules. We're okay with medical marijuana use, or we're okay with marijuana use, but just not on the job, obviously. So we first started with, if you have a medical marijuana card, you're going to need to show us that so that when you test positive, that we're going to be able to overrule that. And if you have any other medical condition, we would like to talk to you about that, you know, because some people were trying to get the medical card, but it's expensive.
It's not free? They don't give that out for free?
No, all about money. It's all about money. It's incredibly expensive, and it's way cheaper to get marijuana off the street. So we have to keep these things in mind, too. Again, I'm not saying you have to accept, drugs in the workplace, but or in this case, criminal backgrounds. But if we are giving people a second chance, you know, I'm working a lot with organizations, and I work with an organization that our whole goal is for second chance employment. And we went down this road a great deal during the pandemic, because we were looking for people who were willing to do jobs that, quite honestly, other people didn't want to do. And so we were looking for second chance employers. And in fact, I don't own anything in this company, but if you ever heard of Dave's Killer Bread,
no.
It is amazing. Oh, well, I bought it in a store one day, and then I'm sitting there reading the package, because yes, I'm the one that reads packages while I'm eating my breakfast. And I was just, it was
like the back of the cereal box in a way, but yes. you're reading the bread. I got it.
I'm reading the bread. A majority of their employees are second chance employment. And I just thought it was amazing. And their bread's expensive. And I was like, I will buy it anytime, because this is amazing. Amazing. It's all over their website. They're proud. Their employees are proud. Their employees are like, you gave us a chance. We're in it to win it with you. So consider banning the box in your organization. Even if you don't have to by law, but please make sure after you get off of listening today's episode that you go and just Google ban the box, and you could see if your state requires some version of ban the box.
The state in which you live, it has a significant impact on how well you perform at work. As a result, a new map from U.S. News and World Report illustrates how labor-friendly the laws are in each of the 50 states, Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. Now, according to experts, national political and economic trends have made employers more powerful than workers over the last few decades. Even though the unemployment rate is low, the Supreme Court has ruled in favor of corporations, and wages haven't kept up with inflation. That was true from the mid-2010s all the way till today. So look, in the absence of regulations granting workers protections and rights, state governments must enact some legislation along the way. California, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Vermont are among the states with nearly full slates, making them among the friendliest to workers. Workers' rights laws are more common in states along the West and in the Northeast. Others have gone in the opposite direction, refusing to strengthen workers' rights and instead enacting legislation that weakens union power. Alabama, Idaho, Kansas, Mississippi, North Dakota, South Carolina, Texas, and Wyoming are declared the least friendly to workers. Employer-friendly laws are common, though, in the Southeast.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing I judge, and I hate to use that word, but it's the truth. The biggest thing that I judge states by is their minimum wage. So when you just follow the federal minimum wage, whew, that means you really don't want to get involved in anything, because the federal minimum wage is, pretty embarrassing. So many states have said, we're just going to create our own minimum wage laws above and beyond the federal minimum wage. The federal minimum wage today, $7.25. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And so many organizations have said no, or many states, have said no, we're going to have to increase that a little bit. But, even if you don't have a state minimum wage that is different than the federal, if you as an organization don't go with market rate, you're not going to get good employees. You're lucky you're going to get any employees. It's just the way it is, because your competitors are going to get them, not you.
There's an excellent resource out there, minimumwage.com. I didn't say that word right. Minimumwage.com. There we go. And it breaks down all the states and puts them into the different categories and buckets for minimum wage and tipped wage. And it is interesting the way that this breaks down. You said $7.25. That hits the mark in Alabama, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and many more along the way. When you get to New York, $13.20 an hour is the minimum wage. New Jersey is $13 an hour. What do you think it is in Hawaii, Wendy?
Since I'm on that page, I know the answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, $10.10 for the win out in Hawaii. Now, tipped wage, could you explain this to me a little bit? We have minimum wage, and then you have tipped wage as a standard metric there. What does tipped wage mean?
So tipped wage, it's funny, you know, when I was in college, I was a waitress and, you know, I got tips. I actually forgot about that wage. And every week or 2 weeks, we would get this little check. And it was kind of a joke because you're like, really? So tip wage means you still have to pay that person. So in Florida, the tip wage is $7.98. versus the minimum wage currently is 11, and that's going up every year until it hits 15. But do you have to pay them $7.98? And then if they don't get enough tips to make the difference, then you're supposed to make the difference up. The tip thing drives me crazy because so many other countries, tips don't exist. You know, you, the customer, pay a pretty good amount for your meal, and then you get the check and you pay it and you walk away. The employer, the restaurant, pays the full hourly rate of the employee. And, you know, when people come here to the United States, since I'm in Florida and we do, I was used to live in the Orlando area, so we had tourists all the time. A lot of tourists didn't know that you were supposed to tip. And so that's where some of the mandatory tips come. You know, if you see on your receipt, sometimes it'll say we automatically put 10% or 20% or whatever it might be. It's because so many tourists from other countries don't know that they're supposed to tip because it's something new to them. So the tipped part is there's a pro and the con. If you're a really, really, really good waitress or bartender, you can make way more money than you did if it was a regular hourly rate. But what if you are a good bartender, for example, but something like, I don't know, COVID happens and it's out of your control?
Yeah.
You know, then you're SOL.
Yeah,
you're
in a tough spot. Tough spot. Yeah. And especially when you start thinking about sick time, too, you know. Currently, there's no federal legal requirements for paid sick leave. For companies subject to the Family and Medical Leave Act, FMLA, the act does require unpaid sick leave to a degree there. But although Federal Family and Medical Leave Act provides for the unpaid job-protected leaves of absence for serious health problems or even childbirth, many Americans don't have access to paid sick leave or family leave days. Paid leave policies, they've made the headlines due to increased bipartisan attention to the pressures that working women face in balancing their careers with culturally expected caregiving responsibilities. And while politicians debate these issues on a national level, some states, including Arizona, California, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Oregon, Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington, have all mandated or require paid sick leave by the end of the last decade. So paid family leave is currently required in fewer states and territories across the United States. California, New Jersey, New York, Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, they've got some stuff cooking as well. Wendy, paid leave, it's something state to state as well. It might drive people to move from Florida to somewhere else, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's paid family leave, there's paid sick leave, and then there's even the school and parental leave now, too. A few states have that as well, where you have to allow parents to take time off of work, and that time is protected, whether it's paid or not, is by the state. But you have to allow them to take time after work, go handle their kids' schooling, whatever. If there's an issue, they need to enroll them, whatever it might be. You know, a lot of these things, they should be, in again, in my opinion, especially when the fact that we're dealing with, I can't find employees, I can't find, you know, I can't keep people. Well, why don't you get some unique benefits going, even if you're not required to? Why don't you not hold people accountable for your strict absence policy because they went to enroll their child in kindergarten, or they went to go talk to their child's teacher, or they were dealing with a parent-in-law, or, you know, a spouse or a child because they were sick, or I don't know, they had a surgery themselves. You can get in a lot of trouble if your absence policy is so strict that you forgot to include in your absence policy exclusions and exceptions for these types of leave. I know many of my clients, we went above and beyond during the COVID era to say, let's just put that absence policy over here because I don't want your employees coming in thinking, I have to come in one more absence this month and I'm going to get fired. And here they turn out they have COVID and they've got, just ended up getting your entire workforce sick. And now you have no employees coming in because of your strict absence policy.
Interestingly, a 1963 federal law required equal pay for equal work, but Mississippi was the only state without its own law since Alabama enacted one in 2019. And here in 2022, Mississippi is set to become the final state putting equal pay laws into effect.
I just don't even understand that, because the Equal Pay Act is a federal law that says, regardless of your gender, at that time, the gender was male or female, and that is what the wording of the law still is, you know, that if you're doing the same job, the same effort, same knowledge, skills, and abilities, then you get paid the same. So I need to look into that one a little bit more as well, because it certainly doesn't make sense. You have to follow the federal law.
Yeah, a lot going on out there. Different states. Wendy, if you could pick any state to move to and work out of, would you leave where you are in Florida and go to somewhere else? Or would you stay put right where you are?
So just for the purpose of employment law, I'm not moving out of Florida, folks. But just for the purpose of employment law, and if I was an employee, I would go to California. Because California has so many protections for employees. Now, since I've already worked in California as an employer, as an HR representative, I would not go to California. But it really, you know, California has stepped up to the plate and said, you know what, federal government, you're not doing anything to protect employees, or you're not doing enough. And companies, you're not doing enough. So we as a government, we're going to do it. With that said, we also have a lot of costs that are involved in that. So that's something to be taken into consideration.
Is there such a thing, though, as pro-employee versus pro-employer at the end of the day? Or do you think that it's just a matter of time till things normalize?
For our last episode of Unique Employment Laws, I want to go over how you, as the listener, can keep an eye on how to stay on top of the laws that affect you. I mean, we could literally be talking about these laws, you know, all day for the next seven episodes, but we're not going to do that. You need to know, though, if you have, as I discussed in the first session, if you even have one employee in a state that is not your home state or where your organization was founded, you need to be aware of how you might be maybe ignoring some laws.
How do we find that out?
You know, the easiest way to track it is enroll in newsletters, like maybe from your payroll provider, like Paycor, ADP, Paychex, whoever you get your payroll from, your benefits providers, so your insurance companies. They usually are on top of this. And the bigger companies, the name brand ones, they have an entire employment team. They have, you know, all of these organizations that are working for them, and they're trying to make themselves more competitive versus their competitors. So they're trying to educate you. I'll just give you an example. Like right here, I have something from a payroll provider. I won't say who it's from, but there's an entire article here on something called the convenience of employer rule. And I was even like, what is this? I kind of got a little bit of heart palpitations when I got it, because I was like, oh, I don't even know what this is. It turns out I did know what it was. I just didn't know the title. So there are several states that maintain a convenience of employer rule. And what that means is if you are a company and you are in some of those states that are really close to each other, you know, like in the New England area, for example, you might have your location, your company location is physically in one state, but employees have to cross state lines to come to work, or maybe they might be working remotely. The convenience of employer rule is a test that tax out of state of employees who work for in-state employers. So if you, there's Connecticut has this, Arkansas, Delaware, Nebraska, New York, and Pennsylvania. If you're not listed in one of those states, or if you're not in those states that I just listed, please don't say, oh, it's not me, because there may be other rules too. But this is where you can say, oh, well, this state that the employee lives in doesn't actually have employment tax, state employment tax for the employee. But since they work for my company, I'm going to tax them at my state level. And that's a huge cost to the employee who may not have known that when they were signed up for that interview.
You know, Wendy, there's also the Department of Labor we have here, their wage and hour division. They work extremely hard to give employers the tools that they need to follow different labor laws that the division is in charge of. And the Wage and Hour Division gives employers a number of helpful compliance resources that make it easy for them to find and understand information about their legal rights and responsibilities. They've got an interactive e-law advisor on their website, all the way up to a full library of free downloadable workplace posters as well. If you've ever started a business, next thing you know, you'll get a bunch of mailers saying, hey, pay me $500, I'll get you every poster you need. They've got them. They've got the posters and a tool to help you determine whether or not you need to have those in your workplace anyways. So their website does give employers important information to help them run their business in full compliance with federal laws. It is an amazing resource. Springboarding from that, they have a whole branch out there underneath the Wage and Hour Division of some of these state labor laws broken out from the state labor offices to state minimum wage laws, state child labor laws, and other state labor laws all put together in one nice drop-down list. For everyone listening, Wendy shared this with me. It's an amazing resource. I could only imagine. You probably use this every day, is that right?
Yeah, there's a couple of websites that I go to every time I get a new client or my phone rings and I have to go, okay, what state is this employee in? What state is this employer in? And it truly does matter. But the Department of Labor websites, I mean, all you have to do is Google DOL state labor laws. And then there's all this information, including free posters. You know, you just mentioned those posters. Those are expensive, man.
Yeah.
They're so expensive. And it drives me crazy when companies go and, sign up for them. Listen, if you have one location, that's fine. But when you have multiple locations and then you have remote workers, those posters can become really, really expensive. And when you can get them for free, our tax dollars already pay for them. You go to these websites, again, just Google DOL state labor laws, and you can go to every single state. And those websites are vastly different from state to state, but you could download the posters that are necessary. If you're interested, I actually have this all on an Excel sheet with a bunch of websites. And you could just message me on LinkedIn or at my email, wendy@thehrlady.com, and I'd be more than happy to send it to you. Another location that I go to all the time is a nonprofit website, and it's called workplacefairness.org. And you can go to workplacefairness.org as an employer or employer representative in this case, or as an employee. And when we're dealing with things like unions, which I know enough to be dangerous, but I am not a union expert. I'm not a OSHA safety expert, as I mentioned before, but there's even things like privacy and workplace surveillance. You know, example you gave earlier, JC.
Yeah,
you know,
new laws in New York here that we have, right?
Yes. So there's a lot of information there, but there's a whole thing here, workplacefairness.org. And if you click on privacy surveillance, for example, what we were just talking about with the ban the box on the criminal records, there is a whole outline there of the states that have some form of ban the box laws, such as Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, so on and so forth. And then you can click specifically on there and find out what it is. For those of you that are in Texas, Texas has its own ban the box, but the city of Texas, Austin, Texas, has an additional ban the box law.
Really?
They
banned banning the box. So the box is okay?
No, they banned the box. So you cannot ask on an application, as we discussed already, if a candidate in these states or cities, for example, has a criminal record. for most of these, you could only ask that after an offer has been made. So Texas has their own law about this. It is for all employers in the state of Texas. It's for a job expected to pay less than $75,000. But then Austin, Texas specifically went, said, nope, we've got more. And they said the ban the box applies to both private and public employers within the city of Austin with 15 or more employees. So they have to follow the Texas one. But then they also have to say the ban the box there says if you have 15 or more employees in the state of, in the city of Austin, you may not inquire about an applicant's criminal history until a conditional offer of employment has been made, as we've discussed. Yeah.
Right.
So I really encourage you to go into that workplacefairness.org. I go there all the time. I use it in a lot of my trainings. I'm very, very grateful that they have done all the research and give us this information. More importantly, I can assure you that your employees are finding websites like this. So they might be the ones to call you out. And if you do get called out by your employee that says, hey, I think you might be violating my right, or a candidate, you know, really take a deep breath and say, well, thank you for bringing that to my attention. Let me look into it.
Over on this end, I use, believe it or not, I've have in the past used the tools through SHRM.org. They've got a great multi-state law comparison tool to compare the laws across state lines. It's a fantastic piece. And then staying up to date on some of the stuff from like HRCI as well. I know I'm calling out the hallmarks of the two biggies right there in the room, but I do have to bring the third in as part of the trifecta. The Twitter feed of JD Supra keeps me up to date as well as National Law Review and many others. And I don't know about you out there, but for me, I like to kind of glance over a lot of things. I might be looking for something very specific that I then drill in and find the actual code of law and then read every single word verbatim and dissect that down to the and slash or, right? But from the high level down, some of these tools are really beneficial, not just the ones Wendy mentioned, but ones that you can find on your own too. Vet them. Just vet them out. Make sure that they are legitimate and accurate. You're not getting slanted perspectives on things. Like some of the resources she was mentioning, they're straightforward. They're going to give you the real deal, the right scoop there.
Yeah.
Hey, people could reach out to you as well for advice on updates on different state laws. Wouldn't that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be more than happy to help. I love to educate myself, and I always find it interesting when I find a unique or wacky law, and I'm like, no, I've got to look into this more. This can't possibly be right. But they usually come out of some court case, right? Some court case was decided. And then they say, you know what, we're getting enough of these. We're going to have to just change the law. Keep in mind, though, even if there isn't some unique, weird or wacky HR employment law in your state, county, city, zip code, there still might be a court case that now we view as the law. And I am not a lawyer. I'm not an employment lawyer. That's where I follow things, like you said, like JD Supra. I also follow National Law Review.
Oh, yeah.
I was glued to those two 100% during 2021 and this year too, just with all the OSHA things and COVID and the vaccinations. And so I encourage you to do that. If you want to get in touch with myself and ask any questions whatsoever, the easiest way to do it would be to message me on LinkedIn. I'm on there several times a day. You don't have to connect with me, but I do always give out a lot of free advice. So message me on there, Wendy Sellers, the HR lady, or you can just email me directly, wendy@thehrlady.com.
I can't lie either, Wendy. As I was emceeing a couple conferences, one was actually for you down in Gainesville. I had the chance to connect up with a employment labor lawyer, and I've been following him on LinkedIn ever since. I'm going to tell you something. Networking with some of these professionals out there really gives you a great opportunity to get their feed as part of your world, too. You don't necessarily have to pay a retainer, right? But you're still going to stay up to date on some of the key topics there. Just a point
Absolutely.
Of consideration.
Yeah, I follow quite a few, and I know who that is. Me and him are probably on LinkedIn all day, every day when we can, especially when a hot topic or law or weird court case went through. There's a couple lawyers that I follow as well, and I encourage you, our listeners, to do the same thing, because, again, It's free advice. They're the experts, and it is marketing for them. But there's quite a few of us, like myself, that we can't help but giving out free information. So, with that said, thanks everybody for tuning in to our unique, weird, and even wacky HR laws. Thanks for spending some time with us, and we will be in touch with you very soon.